It's the Ag Ship Podcast. I'm Patrick Mayhorn, creator of the Ag Ship, a credentialed newsletter covering Utah State athletics. I could just say athletics. I don't need to name all the sports. You know what the sports are. You can subscribe at www.theagship.com, $6 or $10 a month tier. There's also yearly pricing that is heavily discounted. I think it's $60 and $100 a year, which obviously is down from what it would be. That is where you can get all the written stories, game previews, game recaps. Well, recaps isn't the best word. novels, short novels about every game that Utah State plays in men's basketball, women's basketball, and football. All sorts of good stuff over there. Obviously, a busy time of year at Utah State. The Aggies are in the NCAA tournament on the men's side. We're going to talk about that a ton in this show. But before we do, I will introduce my co-host here, Parker Ballantyne. Parker, what's up, man?
What's up, Patrick? It's the best time of year, without a doubt. So it's March Madness. We get it on the men's side, as you mentioned. And you know what? We're going to have it on the women's side
someday.
Soon. Yes. I'll say that much. But for now, it's just the men's. But we have, luckily for us, we have a few generous schools in the conference who have lended their team to me personally. For the next couple of weeks, and so I get to root for not just one team, but quite a few.
Yeah.
So I still have plenty of basketball to be way too emotionally invested in. But yeah, man, it's the best time of year. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, and on the women's side, you know what? We can pull for UNLV. Let's hope that UNLV gets a win or two on the women's side.
They are
due. I think I'm hoping that they can pull that off. I think they're like a 10 seed or something. They should be a higher seed than that, but that's going to be a common thread here on this
that's
show.
A theme. Yeah,
that is a theme. Sure. Yes, we are recording this on the eve of, I think pretty comfortably, at least in my view, the two greatest days of the sports calendar.
The calendar, probably.
Yeah, of the calendar, just right? In general. Yeah, the two greatest days of the year every year, that would be the round of 64, the first 2 days of March Madness. It's so good. It's every year. There's no level of like decline in my interest level. I'm always so jazzed for these days, for these first 2 days, really the first weekend in general. The whole tournament is great, but it's so like every year, the week leading up to it and then the actual days itself, it's so nice to just have everything, like all of the things in my life center around one thing, and the thing is good. It's like a good thing that everybody agrees is good and everybody loves. There's no, like, I'm sick of seeing these national guys asking Greg Sankey how he wants to kill college basketball. I don't need to see that right now. Everybody loves the tournament. Everybody shut up about what you want to do to the tournament or how you want to, you know, make it illegal to be not Alabama or anything like that. Just watch the tournament. And that's the whole point of the week is that everything else stops.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. That actually reminds me of a thought that I've had lately. And I don't think I've tweeted it. And if I haven't, I will at some point, just because it's been on my mind so much. But like college basketball, this season of college basketball was so good that it made me forget that there are people actively trying to destroy college football. That's how awesome college basketball has already been. And we haven't even reached like the best 2 days of it.
Yeah.
So there, like, if you have problems, like not anymore, not for the next 2 days, you don't. All is well in the world when the round of 64 is going on. It's awesome. I don't have to hear anything else. It's just basketball nonstop.
Yeah. It is. I do find myself more and more kind of grasping at college basketball at the NCAA tournament as something to hold on to. As like, if I try to think about college football right now, it feels like I'm sort of staring into the mouth of like a demon or something. It's not a pleasant feeling. I don't feel good about it. And so I just don't have to think about it right now. I know spring practice is going on. That's not my problem until after the NCAA tournament. Then I'll worry about that. But right now, there is no pain inside of this club. We're just watching the NCAA tournament. There's nothing to worry about here.
It's beautiful.
It is. We've got the first four games are done as we record this on Wednesday night. We're going to talk about two of those because they both involve Mountain West teams, one on the very positive side, one on the not so positive side. Before we get to that, before we get to all of the NCAA tournament stuff, we do briefly want to roll through the happenings at last week's tournament, the Mountain West tournament. New Mexico wins the tournament and earns a trip to the NCAA tournament. Somehow it needed to win the conference to do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really know why that would be the case. But they did it, and so it doesn't matter. It's ultimately just something to say on the selection show afterward that they needed to win the automatic bid. Okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Well, they did it, so who would call your bluff? How would we know that that isn't true?
You can't prove the counterfactual.
It does not exist.
Time is linear, and so we cannot see into that alternate universe, unfortunately, or fortunately, because I don't want to live in a world where New Mexico doesn't get a bid. So I'm happy in this one.
Yeah, this one's fine.
Yeah,
this one is, it could be better, but it could be much worse. New Mexico with an extremely impressive 4 games in 4 days run. They're rolling. I mean, they looked really,
that was the first
really,
time,
really good.
I think that was the first time that's ever happened, right? That someone won the tournament.
I think that was the first time that there was even a team that played 4 games or that had played in the first round that was in the championship.
Played their way to the championship.
Yeah.
I think that might be right. I think you're right. Certainly the first time that someone's won, which is an extra step of just very impressive. And they did not have, I mean, Air Force was their first round, which is a pretty weak team. But they didn't have really a game where they did not look like a tournament team, really. I mean, they looked really good in those 4 games, and they did not slow down. It was, oh man, it was something else.
Yeah, I mean, they roll through, what was it? They roll, I think the order was Air Force, Boise State, Colorado State, and then San Diego State to win the championship. And I don't think that, if I'm remembering right, I'm going to look at the scores. I've clicked on Colorado State. That's not going to do me any good. Let's see.
They're still in, but
yeah, they're still
we'll
in.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, none of the games except for the championship were really even close at all. It was a blowout over Air Force, 10 points against Boise State, 13 against Colorado State, and then 7 to beat San Diego State, kind of pulled away at the very end there. Just really, really impressive and kind of a continuation of what we saw in the regular season finale when New Mexico came to the Spectrum and played Utah State, and it took quite the performance from Utah State to keep them at bay. Those guys are really, really rolling right now.
Yeah.
Elsewhere in the tournament, San Diego State representing the other side of the championship game, obviously, and doing so after toppling Utah State in the semifinals. Utah State won a game in the Mountain West tournament. It needed overtime to do it. It beat Fresno State in overtime for the second time in, I think, 3 weeks. Might have been even less than that. It was closer to 2 weeks, I guess. I think Utah State's probably pretty glad that it doesn't need to play Fresno State again this season. Just doesn't seem like a very good matchup, I guess, for Utah State. I think that the amount of just the sheer number of guards and guys who can finish at the rim that Fresno State has, who have size but are still guards who can handle the ball, seem to cause a lot of trouble for Utah State. I don't know if that was like, I think Utah State also probably needed to just play better, I guess, against Fresno State.
Yeah,
I don't know that it was like an impossible matchup. Just play better.
I think you're probably trying to explain something that doesn't have any place in reality. I mean, the fact that Fresno State gave Utah State such a hard time this year is barely reality to me. It's very weird. You can explain it. I think you're right with what you said. Like, I think those, just having so many guards to throw at Utah State gave them a problem, but really just kind of a weird kind of side quest on a storybook season. It was very weird that we just couldn't really handle them all year.
Yeah, and this was with Great Osabor setting a new single game record for Utah State for free throw attempts. He got 24 free throw attempts. It's just strange. It was a strange game. Isaiah Hill is awesome. Like I've said that before on this show. I've said it in previews. Isaiah Hill is really, really good, and he gave Utah State trouble. Isaiah Pope was really good in both games. Jalen Weaver stepped up in this tournament game. They have good players. I think that honestly, Fresno State should have been better this year if it had a coach who was more, hewed towards that style. Justin Hudson is not a small ball coach by any means. He did that out of necessity this year because they didn't have any players. They ran out of bigs. Their bigs were all hurt, and they basically had to go with five guards in this game too because of foul trouble. And so, if they had a small ball coach, I think all year they probably would have won more games. I don't know that they'd be a tournament team or anything, but it seems like it was kind of the strength of the team, and they didn't really come to it down the stretch until when they had to. I'm not saying that to slight Hudson. He's not a small ball coach. They came into the year starting two centers. That's his thing. He's a San Diego State guy, and they had to adjust. And I think it just gave Utah State, for whatever reason, personnel wise, just gave them some trouble. And they managed to survive both times. They managed to get away with it in overtime, but.
One note on Justin Hudson, by the way, the head coach, or now former head coach, of Fresno State is that is the note I was going to make, is he is no longer with Fresno State, by the way.
Yeah, he has passed on to another job, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was one of those situations where it was kind of like everybody knew, right? Because this was I think it was his final year. And if you aren't getting extended, you're getting quasi fired. So I think it was kind of one of those where he knew going into that it was probably done. He kind of mentioned it in the press conference that he was stepping down / not returning / however people wanted to phrase it, but he's not going to be with the Bulldogs next year.
Yeah. I'm curious.
He'll be somewhere, because he's a fine ball coach. He's just like you said, it wasn't.
He might be back at San Diego State. That's not insider information, but they're going to have a spot open on that coaching staff. And I think his wife is the head coach of the women's team at San Diego State. I might be remembering wrong the school, but I know his wife is the head coach of a Mountain West basketball team. I think it's San Diego State. I don't know. I'm curious who they're gonna hire. I'm not going to take us off on a full tangent here, but I am curious, and I'm not logged into 24/7, so I don't know. Who could say? Could be anybody. It might be me.
Who could say?
Nobody knows. It might be me.
That is insider information, because you are the that is you. So Stacy Terry Hudson at San Diego State. As soon as you said that, having watched the women's team a lot this year, that immediately rang a bell for me. So yeah, mm-hmm. He's probably going to be at San Diego State. Just putting
that would make
putting
sense.
Two and two together there.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And he will be, of course, replaced by Patrick Mahorn, who is going to be the head coach of the Fresno State Bulldogs next year.
It's a tall job, but I think I'm ready for it. We're gonna.
Can you do both? Can you still run the action?
I
don't see a problem with that.
The predictions are suspiciously skewed towards Fresno State and games with Utah State. Well, yeah. I think my boys are ready for this one. that would be a fun task to do. You don't get that a ton. You don't get a lot of coaches who are also running media outlets. I think we need more of that.
A different school, especially.
A different school, especially. That would make for some interesting. That's the next venture that Field of 68 is going to do. They're going to start having coaches running team blogs. That's going to be fun.
That's the next step.
As they continue to reverse engineer SB Nation, everything just eventually comes back to that same idea. So semifinal game after the overtime win over Fresno State, Utah State bursts out to a 17-point first half lead. It was 34-17 with not a ton of time left in the first half. They had a huge, it was like a 22-2 run, I think. Everything was working. Jaden Ledee was on the bench with foul trouble. Micah Parrish was also on the bench with foul trouble. Utah State was just getting whatever it wanted offensively, was getting a ton of stops defensively. And then Great Osabor picks up a really ill-advised reach-in foul, and the game just falls apart. The game just completely falls apart on Utah State. He spends the rest of the first half on the bench. San Diego State rattles off a significant run of its own to end the half, cuts it all the way down to three by the break. And then the second half, Utah State did not, the final score was not friendly to Utah State, 86-70, and San Diego State was better and deserved to win the game. I don't know that it was 16 points better. There was a late three in there. It was like a 7-point game with three or four minutes left, and Utah State.
It was.
Sorry, go ahead.
It was, but at the same time, there's something to getting a 17-point lead and then reversing that and being outscored pretty much 35 the rest of the way, right? Is that
Utah State did not deserve to win the game. Utah
yeah.
State did not lose the game fully until the last 3 or 4 minutes. It had
That's correct.
Yeah, it had a couple chances to try and pull back in. It had a couple shots that honestly I think looked pretty good in those circumstances. There was a Josh Adjei three that would have made it like a 5-point game that just rimmed out. I don't remember what they did when it was a 7-point. This is now like almost a week ago, and I'm going off of memory here, but it was like a 7-point game, and they couldn't get it to fall. That might have been the Adjei three. I don't remember.
There was one play with about that same deficit, 7 points, I believe, where I think we scored to cut it to seven. We pulled great immediately.
Then
on the inbound pass, forced a turnover, got the ball back, brought great back in the game. Ladie had four fouls, and we put great back in the game. In my opinion, probably to get great the ball and go at Ladie. Best case scenario, Ladie picks up his fifth, and you score, cut it to five, and great's at the line. This was about 5 minutes to go, and Javon Jackson, I don't think, got the memo. Took a really quick like, mid-range jumper and like airballed it.
Probably
there was a breakdown in communication clearly somewhere, and that to me is where the second half kind of started to.
Yeah,
you lost a lot of momentum there. I'm not going to say that that's what lost the game for Utah State, but you lost a ton of momentum right there.
Yeah, that was if they were going to do it, that was going to be the time, and they end up with. I don't have the numbers to back this up, but I would have to think that a corner mid-range jumper is probably, statistically speaking, the lowest percentage shot that you can take on a basketball court.
Yeah, you'd have to ask David Locke what he thinks about that kind of shot, but I don't think he likes it.
That's not, at least the corner three, you know, there are guys who, like, that's their rhythm shot. You know, you don't have the backboard, but there are it's a little bit closer, I think. I don't know if they've changed the arc, but it's a little bit shorter. There are some guys for whom that's a really good shot. The mid-range corner shot, very, very rarely is that a shot that you should be taking. That's not a great...
Especially, I mean, that was, like, the first third of the shot clock, too, if I remember right, which is... was not good.
He struggled.
Yeah.
It was a tough game.
He did have
Jackson,
a rough game,
which is too bad because he played really well against Fresno State. And in general, down the stretch here, he has been good for Utah State, and I think he's going to be important on Friday in the game we're going to talk about in a little bit. But Utah State just really collapsed. Honestly, I don't know that there's another way to put it. I think that
I think that's fair.
In retrospect. Can you say that they should have put great back in the first half with two fouls? Yeah, I think you could say that in retrospect.
You could. Absolutely.
The result afterward kind of proves the idea that they really should have tried to stop that skid a little bit more than they did. And that's not to say that they didn't try, but it just didn't work. But they don't usually do that. Their two foul participation this year is 8.6%, which is 319th. They don't do that. They mostly just tried to do what they usually did, and they've won 27 games doing that. They just, this time they didn't have it. The backups were not ready to go. San Diego State took advantage of the game, got away from them, and they never really got it back.
And that's one thing I want to draw attention to as well, is kind of this the way that Danny Sprinkle approached this game as a coach. I like Danny Sprinkle a lot, obviously. I've said as much. If you're surprised by me saying that, where have you been? But you know what? This is one of those games where I think he was outcoached by Brian Dutcher, one of the best coaches probably that I've ever seen in my life. And so that is not a slight to Danny Sprinkle at all.
Yeah, there's no shame in getting outcoached by Brian Dutcher. Yeah. Most people do. He's a really, really, really
Most
good
people
basketball
do.
Coach. And he's been around
and
forever.
And so I looked. So obviously this was Danny Sprinkle's first Mountain West tournament. And I think that played into that where Brian Dutcher, he's been around. I think he knows, okay, Ladie has two fouls. I know how he's going to be officiated the rest of the way. Like, the referees are not going to give him a third foul on a ticky-tack, you know, reach in under the basket, something like that. Like, I think he just knows his way around the league so well. And I looked this up because I thought I had this right. So he came from Michigan with
Steve Fisher.
Oh, man. I forgot his name.
Steve Fisher.
Steve Fisher. That's right. as the associate head coach in 1999. Patrick, do you know what else happened in 1999? A lot of things happened, but I got one.
My birth, your birth, both of our births, is that?
My birth was not. Were you born in 99?
I was.
Okay, there you go. Something else was born in 99,
The
and that
Mountain
is the
West.
Mountain West
Yeah. There you
Conference.
go. Yeah. Has Brian Dutcher
There has
seen all
never
of it?
been. What?
Has he seen every single year of the Mountain West? Is that where you were going?
Yes,
Oh my
that is
gosh.
where I was going. There has never been a Mountain West tournament that Brian Dutcher was not on the sidelines. And we're not talking about like an equipment manager or a grad assistant. He came in as Steve Fisher's top assistant, associate head coach from day one. So he's been around the block. He
Man
knows
alive.
this tournament pretty well, is what I'm saying. So
Yeah.
for Danny Sprinkle, I think we forget how young he is sometimes. This is his first Mountain West tournament.
Yeah.
You know what? The old man still has it. And you got out coached by Brian Dutcher.
Yep.
That's
It
fine. There's no shame
happens.
in that.
Yeah.
Everybody gets the business from Brian Dutcher every once in a while.
Yeah. Even more than that sometimes. Even
Yeah,
more than that.
oh,
Even more
yeah, a
than
lot
once in a
more than
while. That
that.
is, yeah, that is what he does. Yeah, Danny Sprinkle, for reference, was finishing his playing career in 1999 and beginning his coaching career in 2000. So Brian Dutcher has been in the Mountain West for as long as Danny Sprinkle has been a coach.
Wow,
That's he even
wow.
longer, I think. I
Longer,
think a year
yeah,
longer.
longer by a year. I'm curious. I wonder if they ever coached and played against each other. I have to look at that at some point.
Probably, because Sprinkle
I
was
would
at,
assume they would,
yeah,
yeah.
he was at Northridge and Fullerton. I would guess they played at least a couple times,
Yeah.
during that stretch. They weren't in the same league, obviously, but
Yeah.
those schools play sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, every now and then. But yeah, D I mean, Dutcher is who he is. It's with that stat in mind, and also just from, knowing anything about Dutcher, it is preposterous that people continue to put him on like coaching search lists. They're like, oh, Brian Dutcher might be a candidate at Michigan. He's not going anywhere. He's an old man and he lives in San Diego. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
He's done.
Yeah.
That's the place he's going to be. It's not.
Yeah, I saw that same thing and I was like, "You know what? Like if I'm wrong on this one, I will wear that like I will gladly admit that I'm wrong. He's not going anywhere.
No,
He's getting
he's.
paid all the money he wants to coach basketball, which he apparently loves and is very good at, and he gets to live in San Diego, and from my understanding, he's like a total family man and just hangs out with his grandkids on the beach all the time. Like
Yeah.
he's having a good time.
Yeah,
He's doing what he wants to do."
that's not too bad a life at all. He's
Yeah.
64. He's been in San Diego at San Diego State since 1999. I don't think he wants to go to Ann Arbor. I don't think that
Do you
anybody
think
who's
this is
living
first
that
chance to
life
get
wants
out?
to,
Like, come
yeah,
on.
like
People have called him
he
before.
went to
I
the
will say, like,
championship game last year.
his phone has been ringing nonstop for probably 5 years. Yeah, I will say, like, yeah, okay, it's interesting that he did coach at Michigan, but like, you know what? He did coach at Michigan. He left. Now he's at San Diego State. I
Yeah.
don't think he's
He coached at Illinois too. Is that gonna he played at Minnesota. Is that gonna sway him? You got you the come on. I don't know. Just a miss. I'm not even directing this at anybody. Just I see
No,
his name
same,
pop
yeah.
up on general. Oh, he might be a candidate at Michigan. He's not a candidate at Michigan. He's Brian Dutcher. He's not going anywhere. That's not what he
Yeah.
does.
I saw Nico Medved, his name like floated for that job. And I was like,
Yeah.
yeah, you know what? That's like 1,000% more likely
Yeah.
than Brian Dutcher.
Yeah,
You're
that's yeah, at least that could happen. Brian Dutcher is
yeah,
not,
at
yeah.
least
He's just
yeah.
he's eternal. He's going to be at San Diego State until he doesn't want to coach anymore, and he's going to
Yeah.
keep on doing this, and he's going to continue to be really hard to beat because he's one of the best coaches in America.
Yeah,
He's
he's
just
fantastic at what he does. Well,
yeah,
yeah, he's really good at what he does.
and to bring it back to Utah State, like you said, it happens. Danny Sprinkle, I think, got outcoached by Brian Dutcher. A lot of very good coaches have been outcoached by Brian Dutcher and will continue to be outcoached by Brian Dutcher. He's tremendously good at what he does.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that even there were even moments where I thought Sprinkle, pulled some rabbits out of hats. I thought that the press there that you mentioned a minute ago that yielded nothing, but I thought that quick subbing great out to go with like a 5-guard lineup to press, getting the steal and then putting him back in. I thought that was really good. I thought that was a really cool move to really just
Oh,
kind
yeah.
of snatch a possession.
It was really cool.
The intentionally fouling with like 3 minutes left was less of a master stroke, I think. I get he was what he
Maybe.
was going for, but it didn't end up working out especially well. And then I think on that same
but
possession,
if it did,
yeah, if it did,
work, we'd be, I think, saying the exact opposite.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah,
I think that the ultimate result of that was on the exact same possession where they did pick up three fouls for no real reason, and then they cut it off. It ended with a Ladie offensive rebound, and then he got fouled on the offensive rebound, and he got two free throws for no. There was no reason for him to have those free throws. It was just made up fouls that they picked up for no benefit. That was tough. That was a tough turn of events for Utah State. That was really kind of when the game fully got away from them.
But it is
what it is. I don't think that it's like I don't think that this loss is any more than any of the other losses they've taken this season, like a sign of the apocalypse. Like they've bounced back from losses really well. They've only had back to back losses once this year. And it happens sometimes. They ran out of steam. They lost the schematic battle. San Diego State shot the cover off the basketball for the second time in three matchups this year, which Utah State contributed at least partially to by giving them too many offensive rebounds. You really can't do that against those guys because they'll find a rhythm eventually. They're not a great shooting team, but if you give them enough shots at the hoop, they will knock some down. It ends in a 16-point loss. It's not like Utah State won the conference in the regular season, which is the one, you know, when you're in a league that sends more than one team to the tournament, which I think is still kind of an adjustment period for Utah State fans, understandably, because Utah State was in a one bid league forever. And now it's in a six bid league, which again, we're going to talk about in a minute. The conference tournaments really don't matter that much if you're in the NCAA tournament when you enter the conference tournaments. It doesn't matter that much. The auto bid isn't really necessary.
Unless you're New Mexico.
They've had to win a couple games in the tournament the last couple times because they weren't super well positioned heading into the last week of the season. But this year, I mean, they were fine, and they won the regular season tournament or the regular season championship. Personally, I put more stock in that than I do in the conference tournaments because I think it's more impressive to win an 18-game run that everyone is involved in rather than winning three games in 3 days at the right time. That's okay.
Right.
That's great if you can do it, but it's I think kind of the lowest stakes. And I'm really not just saying this because of the result. I said this to somebody going into the game, like before the game, I think the day before the game. It was kind of the lowest stakes possible matchup that you could get in March between Utah State and San Diego State. There's never been a lower stakes March matchup between these. They were both comfortably in the tournament. It was pretty much just playing for positioning, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's like one thing that Jacob Nielsen really converted me to is just like that the importance of a, you know, that regular season title. He kind of deepened my appreciation for that working with him, but it's true. I mean, and I pulled the numbers on this a few years ago and I should do it again. And I can't even remember what the exact number is, but I remember basically the gist of it where in the Mountain West, when the regular season champ does not win the tournament, they go to the turn. They are given a bid almost every single time. It's probably every single time. Maybe early on there was some weird.
There were some lean years in there. But, yeah, like 16, 17-ish. There were some years where like Fresno State won the conference tournament and was the only team to go.
There has been some weird years, but and most of the time, to be fair, it's like a split title with like historically it's like Nevada and San Diego State, and one of them will win the tournament anyway. Winning the regular season title is essentially an auto bid in the Mountain West, as it is in most power conferences. Like if you win the Big 12 regular season, you're going to the tournament. The Mountain West is really just the same way. In that regard.
And I think also just like sentimentally, I think it's a better way to measure teams, right? College basketball is mostly played on home and away floors, and you play almost everybody twice, and I like the conference tournament race. I think that the conference tournament race has higher stakes when you're in a league that sends multiple teams to the NCAA tournament. And I think ultimately the loss for Utah State can serve as another point that they can learn from. There's stuff from that game that they do need to you know, have improved by the time they take the floor again on Friday. But it's also just, it is what it is. You lost in the semifinals to a team that goes to the finals every year. It happens. Yeah, anyway, so let's move on here. NCAA tournament, let's talk about, we've hinted at this, Utah State draws the number 8 seed in the Midwest. We'll play number 9 seeded TCU in Indianapolis late Friday night. It'll be about 8 p.m. local time, or mountain time, rather. Local time for me. local time for the show. 10 p.m. Eastern time, which is local time for the game. We're going to preview that matchup in full here in a minute. I do want to talk a little bit more about the NCAA tournament writ large and some of the seeding stuff with the Mountain West, which was a topic of much conversation in the hours and days immediately following the reveal of the bracket. I'm pulling up the bracket here on my phone on the extremely wonky and not super well-functioning March Madness Live app. I don't know how this happens to them every year. Every year the tournament comes around and the app is not ready for the level of... It seems like you guys should beef up your app. You're the NCAA. I'm seeing sponsors here from Coca-Cola, Capital One, and Buick. Are you telling me you can't make a better app? Where's the money going? What's the point of that?
It's not going to the players, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Who's that money going to?
Their money's not going to the players anyway.
Well,
I'll tell you where it's going. It's going to the Mountain West, baby. That's where it's going this year.
That's right.
We're taking we're earning quite a bag, you know, which is what you're kind of alluding to. But build a better app, guys. Come on. I'm on the Worldwide Later over here, ESPN app.
There we go.
Works all right for me, so I'll stick with that one.
last night when I was like, the first four game was happening, I was trying to load the app and it was like, internet not working, please retry. It's like, my internet's working fine, this is on your end. It's the
don't
first
you love
game.
That when the app will try to blame something completely unrelated, it's like,
your
the internet's
is
down
off.
Like actually it's not.
you need to turn your notifications on or I can't work. Shut up. You're just a phone app. You can't tell me what
the
to
app
do.
Is telling you, hey, I think your phone's broken.
No, it's not.
You're not working.
Why don't you call Coca-Cola and get a little bit more money, and then we can talk. This is not my problem. Anyway, seeding. San Diego State leads the way as a 5 seed, draws UAB in the first round. We've got, here we go, New Mexico as an 11. Again, apparently they needed to win the conference championship to get in and to earn an 11 seed, which feels ridiculously low, and that will be one of several, but they will draw 6-seeded Clemson. Honestly, as 6 seeds go, could have done a lot worse. You could have gotten a good team in that spot, so not that bad for New Mexico. Number 10 seed.
We'll circle back and talk about some of these in a second, but that's basically the way to sum that one up.
Also in the West, kind of a similar situation here, I think, honestly, matchup-wise. Not that huge of a difference between the two seeds here, but Nevada gets a 10. They will play Dayton as a 7. I think you could flip those numbers and you'd get pretty much the same. That would be fine if you wanted to have Nevada as a 7 and Dayton as a 10. That would make sense to me. I don't think
I kind of thought the same thing. These two teams would be playing anyway.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I guess they just have to wear their blue uniforms instead of their white uniforms. Not the end of the world.
Yeah.
We've also got on the other side of the bracket here in the, well, would have been in the South, Boise State as a play-in team, drew Colorado in a 10 seed, the I think the first time ever that it's been 10 seeds because of the number of bid stealers. Boise State lost tonight as we're recording to Colorado. We can talk about that game a little bit in more depth, but I'm going to roll through the rest of these seeds here. We have Utah State as an 8, of course, as I mentioned, and then also in the Midwest, down on the other side of the bracket, Colorado State as a 10, also in the play-in, really kind of taking it to Virginia on Tuesday night and advancing into a matchup with 7-seeded Texas. Where do you want to go first here with this?
Let's just go overall. Overall, I would be lying if I said I didn't feel like this was a pretty insulting seed, how this shook down, how this played out, rather. It felt like, what's that term, malicious compliance or whatever, where someone will follow the rules, but in the most annoying way possible.
Yeah.
That's what this felt like from the NCAA, where the Mountain West was clearly a six bid league to anybody watching basketball this year. It was a six bid league. And so for them to kind of say, hey, no, you were going to be a five bid. New Mexico is a bid stealer, feels pretty insulting. So generally, overall, I think that's where I am at. It's a little bit frustrating. I think the Mountain West is a respected league. I thought it was. This was a pretty big sign of disrespect. I think the Mountain West was dangerously close to being a five bid league, or something closer to that. I think, you know, we talked last week and talked about how, hey, if UNLV beats New Mexico in the championship game, we could have seven. Looking back on that, I mean, I guess we were just hopeless romantics with that idea. I honestly think that would have dropped us to a five. I think new UNLV probably would have stolen New Mexico's and knocked the whole conference down a peg, which is not what the committee's supposed to look at, but clearly they're looking at things outside of their purview here. But yeah, I think that would have dropped us down to probably a five bid league. And then to my note about the committee looking at things outside of their purview and what they're supposed to look at and what they say they're looking at, it's pretty clear here with San Diego State at the five, which is the right place for them to be. I had them probably as a four or a five, depending on how they finished up that tournament in Vegas. Having them shown the respect that they deserve, which is pretty clearly, in my opinion, based on last year's performance. And just previous years in general, performance from the Aztecs, whereas the rest of the conference has struggled a lot in March. This looks to be a reflection of that. It is not supposed to be a reflection of that. I
For
understand the
for
issues that the
obvious
conference has
reasons,
had,
right?
but yeah, for obvious
Like
reasons.
Utah State, none of Utah State's players were on the team last year, or for any like they didn't play in the game. Like the three guys who were here were all on the bench watching, and like you could say the same about a lot of the teams in the field. There's not quite the same turnover on any other team in the field, but especially right now in college basketball, I don't know how you can be like logo scouting for the. There's no turn. There's no like.
Just
There's no
awful, awful
continuity.
stuff.
Everybody has everybody else's players every year. It's like TCU has like six guys from Texas Tech. Did you seed them based on that? Did you see? Well, Texas Tech usually does pretty well, so we need to bump these guys up to a nine. They're not even playing for Texas Tech anymore. They're on a
It's
different
just
team.
silliness, right? Like that part of it is really silly. And I think that's what's frustrating for me. And like there's part of me that, you know, almost understands where they're coming from. Like I was as disappointed as everybody to see what the Mountain West has done in the past few years outside of basically San Diego State the past couple of years, and then Nevada a few years ago when they made a Sweet 16 run. Outside of that, nobody's done anything. I understand that, but you're not allowed to take that out on these current teams. So it's kind of frustrated with the seeding in general. Now, as you mentioned, some of the actual matchups aren't all that bad. I think if you adjust for seed, adjusting for seeding, I think that New Mexico Clemson is probably just about the best matchup you could ask for. New Mexico is probably the best 11 seed that the tournament has seen in a decade. I mean, this,
Let me
that is
while you
so absurdly low.
Talk here, I have to pull up a stat that I read this morning from
Okay. Okay.
Friend of the podcast, Will Warren, who writes the Stats by Will, I think it's Stats by Will, newsletter, who he had a stat on just how good of an 11 seed New Mexico is, that kind of opened my
Okay.
eyes. So you can go ahead and
All right.
keep talking while I
Yeah.
look this
Well,
up.
while you're pulling that up, I just on the other side of that matchup, Clemson is an embarrassingly bad six seed. I mean, you mentioned it as you introduced these teams. Usually you have to play somebody good when you're an 11 seed. I love this matchup for the Lobos. This is a dream scenario for the Lobos as an 11 seed. Like I said, one of the better 11 seeds probably ever, which you're pulling up a stat for, and then Clemson, I just am not impressed with. So, I like that matchup for sure.
Here we go. I have to view the entire message because this thing was 4,000 words.
Sweet.
Shout out to Will. Yeah, here we go. So he writes, New Mexico is just the 6th, 11th seed in history to have a shot volume gap of plus 10 or better over their opponent, which is a combination of shots that you take and offensive rebounds, essentially. It's the number of shots that you generate compared to the number of shots that your opponents generate. The previous five of those six went 4-1, with two making the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight. It might have been a different story where we mentioned how good of an 11 seed that they are, but the general consensus is they're a really, 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 really strong 11 seed. They're a preposterously strong 11 seed.
So I have the net rankings right here of all the 11 seeds.
Mm-hmm.
It goes 22, 59, 63, and then 83. Mm. Do you know the other three? Do you have the other three seeds?
I do not.
All right. So it's in order. It's Oregon, NC State, Duquesne. So Oregon is 59, NC State is 63, and then Duquesne at 83.
Yeah.
Net ranking. New Mexico's 22. What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? And I know they're not basing it off of the net, but the net is a pretty reliable metric that is pretty widely accepted and pretty widely used. How can you possibly be so high in the net and an 11 seed? I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Here's the stat that I was looking for. They have the best odds to beat a 6 seed as an 11 seed since 2014 Tennessee, which is one of those teams that went to the Sweet 16, and the fourth best odds of an 11 over a 6 of all time. That I think they're favored in the game. Like the betting markets have them favored in the game.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
I just pulled up the net ranking, the full net rankings. Do you know what? Do you know what Clemson is right now?
It's probably not 22.
It's not 22. It's 35.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have we ever had an 11 seed higher in the net rankings than the 6 across from them?
It's maybe happened once or twice. Clemson is also 36th in KenPom, whereas New Mexico is 22nd in that as well. KenPom also has New Mexico straight up favored by 2 points to win the game.
And the crazy thing about this isn't even the most egregious seeding in the conference. I think that belongs to Nevada.
Yeah.
Nevada at the 10 is awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's...
Yeah,
it really did
kind of feel like they just took every Mountain West seed and then save for San Diego State and then just kind of bumped them down two seeds from that. Like Utah State was largely literally projected as a 6, lands as an 8. Nevada is definitely the most egregious. They were up, they were getting 6 conversation. They were 6 or 7 conversation. They end up as a 10. Boise State having to play in the play-in is ridiculous. I know what the result was, and again, we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They were like, it was looking like an 8. They land as a 10 and one of the last four in, as does Colorado State, which was a little bit closer to that, but like it was a 9 or an 8 for Colorado State in almost every spot as well. And then New Mexico, I you know, before they win the conference tournament, I think that like once they get to the championship game, you could be talking 11 or 10. Once they win that game, I think it's a 9. I think that it becomes a 9 or an 8. And instead they land at 11. It is what it is. I think the treating an entire conference like this for the results of the conference in past years with different teams and different coaches and different players and all of that doesn't make sense. It's not really, it's like vibes based analysis. It's not really what the committee I think should be doing. That's
and
not,
I'm a fan of vibes based analysis.
Yeah, but not,
I understand it.
But not for this.
On. Yeah, time and place.
Yeah, like we're not seeding
the
tournament.
Not the time or the place.
Maybe we should be. and it's just it does feel kind of vindictive. It certainly does, and it is just a like that's not how sports work. That's not that just because the Mountain West hasn't traditionally had a ton of success in the NCAA tournament doesn't mean that it can't, or doesn't mean that the resumes that it has built for this season are then they need to be, you know, like excessively bumped down for the sake of trying to, I guess, perpetuate those struggles. Like, I don't really, you're just making it like, it's self-fulfilling prophecy. You give them lower seeds, it's going to be harder for them to win games.
Yeah.
That's not, that's not a good reason to do that. That's not a good reason. You're not going to get an accurate reading on the conference if you keep doing that. The regular season and the stuff that's played before the tournament of that year is the only thing that matters for seeding. I don't care what they did. I don't like it's if DePaul came and won the Big East next year, won the Big East regular season and had a really good year, and then landed as like an 11 seed because, well, they're DePaul, they can't be good. That would be stupid. I don't like I'm not a Big East guy. That would still be dumb. That's not a good reason to do that. That doesn't make any sense.
I totally agree with that. You have to. I mean, it's almost the same conversation, you know, to bring up college football again and the flaws that it has. Like, it's almost that same conversation we were having. Just like, okay, then do the games matter then? Like, why play the games? Do the games matter or not? And that's a little bit of a frustrating thing here, because like, are we doing this based on logos and conferences, or are we doing this based on the seasons that these teams have had? The season that Nevada had does not warrant a 10 seed. I'm sorry, it doesn't. Remember that quote from Coach Alford that got, you know, made the rounds on Utah State Twitter, where
I
he,
certainly do.
yeah, they didn't come to Lawler. The context there was that Nevada was fighting for a chance, a shot at the title, a share of the regular season title. This isn't a team that was just like a pretty good Mountain West team. They were half a game back. Did they end up half a game or one game back on the title? Like,
I think it
come on
was,
now. Like, this is a good team. They clearly deserve, I think, more than a 10 seed. An 11 is absurd for any Mountain West team. I think, like, if Air Force steals a bid, they're at 11 or a 12, right? Like, that's what you do. I mean, maybe like down to like a 13, 14, but like, even those are kind of reserved for other schools. Like, an 11 is really, really, really low, especially, I mean, we're talking about a really, really good conference and a team that I think is way better than that. But and like you said, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I do like those matchups a lot for New Mexico and Nevada in particular. We'll talk about some of those other ones in a minute. Those matchups are about as favorable as you can get. Like you said, Nevada Dayton could be switched and should be switched, and I would be happy with that. But like, you know, like you said, it's just the same team, just different jerseys. Nevada can wear their road blues instead of their home whites. That's fine. But that's, you know, that doesn't make it okay that they were egregiously underseeded. You know what I mean?
And like, with the Utah State side of this, I don't think a team that wins the outright regular season championship in a six bid, like by the committee's estimation, a six bid league should be the eight seed under any circumstances. I don't know how that, unless they went 0-14 in the non-conference, which they didn't. They went 13-1. I don't know how you could. I don't know how you'd come to that. They won the league that had six teams that went to the tournament. If that happened in the Big Ten or the Big East or anywhere else, you'd give them a one seed. That's not like that's. I don't know how eight could possibly be the conclusion of that. It doesn't. It just does. It makes it seem like none of the games matter, which is unfortunate because that's 95% of the college basketball season is the regular season games. They should have some level of importance that's not just predetermined by the conference that you're in. That's it's silly. It's frustrating. It is what it is. Like you said, I think that the matchups in general for the league are fairly favorable here. We've seen two already go down. Colorado State crushes Virginia in the first four and will play Texas, as I mentioned, 67-42 in that game. Just dominant from Colorado State. I think Virginia was not deserving of the spot that it got, or being in the tournament at all, or really even thinking about the tournament. I think Virginia should be banned from playing basketball for 5 years. But Colorado State takes care of business there regardless and will play Texas. I like that matchup a decent amount for Colorado State. Honestly, if Colorado State's hitting threes, I like just about every matchup it could possibly get. That's a hard team to stop when they're knocking down shots. And then Boise State falls in the first four to Colorado. That was really, honestly, coming into the tournament, the one matchup that I couldn't really talk myself into. I didn't really like for the Mountain West because Colorado has like a lottery pick on its team, and I think another first round draft guy who has been getting that sort of buzz. And on it, honestly, I know the seed that they got in the Mountain West tournament. I know their record. I was really never all that impressed with Boise State. I don't know. They were fine. They have some good players. They're also, you know, they went like 12 of 35 on their layups in that game and didn't really play all that well and probably should have won anyway. I'm not, if we're going to sacrifice a Mountain West team early on, I'm not terribly upset with it being that one, because I think honestly they're the worst of the six.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, because especially coming out of that first four and playing Florida, I think is a tough matchup. I think Florida's really, really good. Mm. I think for all that we've talked kind of about some of those favorable matchups, Florida is probably not one of them. You know, you mentioned Colorado State getting Virginia, a team that should not have been there. That's a great matchup for Colorado State. In what I would say, in all fairness, I didn't have any problems with where Colorado State was seeded. I think having them at the 10 in a first four as kind of that those last four in, that was probably fair.
Yeah.
The way that they kind of played down the stretch, I was okay with that seed. And they, you know what, they did what they had to do. I mean, you basically that first four in a position like that where Colorado State is, the committee's saying, okay, prove it to me. You know, like, show us why we should have put you in the round of 64. And that's exactly what Colorado State did. Boise State wasn't able to do that. They really kind of gave that game away. They did not, they didn't play their best game, but they did probably play one of their worst games. It was pretty hard to watch. Not finishing around the basket, a lot of turnovers. Their defense looked kind of like really, really good at times, but just wasn't enough. Yeah, like you said, you know what? If Boise's the team that's out coming into that round of 64, that's okay with me. I didn't like their chance against Florida. I like what everybody else is doing more. I like what Colorado State is going to be able to do, I think, against Texas if they can play. You know, if they can bring the defense they did against Virginia and add some three-point shooting, like you said, that looks good. I'm kind of okay with the way that played out. I would have loved to see Boise get in. Just because, like, at this point, it is about the conference winning a bunch of games and making the committee look silly, but that one didn't work out. That's you play the way Boise did tonight, you're not going to win a game in March.
Yeah, the final stats for them, they shot 34% from the field. Despite they took almost 20 more shots than Colorado did. They had 15 offensive rebounds. I have been encouraged by the rebounding advantage that both Colorado State and Boise State had in their games, but which they were both substantial. But 23 of 67 is not going to get the job done, nor is 2 of 18 from 3. The issue that I've long had with Boise State as currently constructed, this was not a big problem last year because they had Marcus Shaver Jr., but I don't think that you can really win all that many games at this point in the season if you don't have really good guard play, and they don't have really good guard play. They just don't. It's not a deep room. This is not just point guard either. It's just guard play. Max Rice barely did anything in this game, and too many times this season you could say that about him. He barely did anything in a basketball game. He had 2 points, two assists. He had four personal fouls, still played 28 minutes, but he was 1 of 9 from the field, as was Omar Stanley. Tyson Degenhart had 6 points and 4 boards on 3 of 10 shooting. Yeah, it's just not going to work.
It was rough.
It's not going to work for those guys, and I don't think that it was any, you know, I don't think that it's like a giant, you know, structural issue with the league because they lost that game. I think it's more just that Boise State wasn't all that well constructed this year, frankly. They talked a lot about having a dream team for this year, and I never really saw that. I never really saw that from those guys. It kind of just looked like a team that had six players and like three of them were good.
I saw a good team, but I didn't see a dream team. Like, if that's your dream team, come on. Look around, read the room. Like, look at what Utah State, the players that Utah State has had in the past decade, San Diego State, Nevada, and you're going to roll this out as your dream team? Come on now.
Yeah.
Like,
you can't be saying
everybody else in the league has guys in the NBA. Not everybody else, but the other top teams in the league has. I mean, you want to talk dream team, talk to San Diego State and what they've done. So that is not a dream team, and they are not playing anymore because of that. But
yeah.
They were good enough to get to the tournament, which was great. I'm glad they did, but the deep run will be reserved for somebody else, not named the Broncos.
Yep. The other two
still got five in, so we still got good chance.
There you go. The other two first round matchups: San Diego State against UAB. I feel pretty good about for San Diego State.
Yeah.
I think as 12 seed draws go, that's one of the less scary ones. There are some 12 seeds in the mix, like James Madison would have been a really, really tough draw because that's just a really good team. UAB, like. I think UAB kind of like just does a lot of the same stuff that San Diego State does, but worse. It's not a super strong shooting team, and like frankly, you're not going to beat San Diego State at that game very often because that's the game that they play, and they're
good at it.
Yeah, they have better players than you do. that's kind of the end all be all with them, is that eventually if you play San Diego State's game, you're still playing San Diego State's game, and they're better at it than you are. It's not a good idea. I feel pretty good about that. And then
I do too. Like you could have drawn McNeese, who's also a 12, or as you mentioned, like James Madison. So. You'll take UAB given the company there.
Yeah. Could have been worse, I think, there. Looking forward to what could potentially be an awesome round of 32 game with Auburn. I think that would be really, really fun. Or maybe Yale. Who knows? Might be Yale.
Hey, don't count out the Ivy League, man.
Another one that's good to dodge. Good that they're a 13 instead of a 12, and good that they're playing Auburn instead of San Diego State. And then the last one, obviously, is the one that is most important for the sake of this podcast. That would be Utah State TCU. I will have a full written preview coming here very soon. For now, we will break it down on the podcast. We're not going to go into, you know, an hour worth of detail because I don't have an hour worth of detail to break down yet. Still working on the preview, but I think people get the general idea with TCU. The comparison that I made immediately, like the first comparison that came to mind, looking at their statistical profiles, looking at the you know physical body types that they have on the roster, I think the easy comparison is probably San Diego State. I think that it's a team that's built somewhat familiarly to Utah State. They recognize this. This is a team that exists in the Mountain West, at least in structure, the way that they work. It's not identical. TCU can actually shoot the ball pretty well from deep. They just choose not to, which is strange. It's always interesting to see a team that's like top 100 in three-point shooting percentage and then outside of the top 300 in three-point attempt rate just shoot the ball more. What are you doing?
So weird.
Who are we trying to fool here? Just shoot the ball more. At least with Utah State, like, they're outside of they're 281 in 3-point attempt rate and 269 in 3-point percentage. That makes sense. You probably shouldn't shoot the three that much.
Yeah.
TCU,
that tracks.
You guys might want to shoot the three more. You're 87th in 3-point hit rate. You should shoot the three. They're worth more than two. Did you know that?
a lot more, like 50% more.
Yeah, you should do that, but they don't. And so their offense is it's capable. It's not elite. I think it has some of the same issues that San Diego State's offense has. They do move the ball really well. Jamie Dixon teams always move the ball really well. They move up tempo. They're really good in transition, but so is Utah State. And I think that that's probably what this matchup is really going to come down to. I think rebounding is going to be important. Utah State cannot. Yep. Utah State can't give these guys a million shots. It's not going to work. And for as much as it feels like Utah State has struggled to prevent offensive rebounds this year, and it has in some spots, especially losses, but for the most part, Utah State's 42nd in offensive rebound rate allowed. That's strong. That's really strong. That's among the better rates in the league, and that can work. That can compete with TCU. TCU doesn't have a ton of giant players. They have size. They have a bunch of size and they have a bunch of depth. They've got, 6'7", 215 Emmanuel Miller, 6'8", 215 Micah Peavy, 6'8", 215 Jacoby Coles, 6'7", 220 Chuck O'Bannon, 6'9", 235 Xavier Cork. Like, there's a lot of size on this team.
Yeah,
Ernest Uday as well is 6'11", 260. But he's the only one who's, taller than 6'9". And
like the only one blocking shots too.
Yeah, and he's really the those are the only two above 6'8". They have a lot of 6'8", which is not ideal for Utah State, but Utah State does have size. It does have four players who are up over that number off the top of my head with Great, Isaac, Carson Templin, and Khalifa Sacco. I don't know if all four of those guys will play in this game, but they do have them. And I don't know that the size is necessarily going to be limiting here. I think Utah State has size. I think it has athleticism to play this game. And I think that if it's a battle of transition efficiency, Utah State has that advantage. Utah State is like third or fourth in transition offense points per possession wise, and has been pretty decent defensively. TCU's transition offense is also excellent. Its transition defense is not good. They sell out to get those offensive rebounds, and they don't get back to stop transition scoring. That's not a great way to beat Utah State.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'm with you there. Overall, I think I'm okay with this matchup. I you know, it could have been worse, I think, is kind of a phrase we've landed on a lot looking at this, the way this ended up looking like for the Mountain West. Adjusted for like the seed, you know, what you'd expect in an 8-9, I think it's okay. It's maybe one of the worst matchups in the conference. Like, just because, like I said, like that Nevada Baylor is almost, you know, Nevada Baylor and New Mexico Clemson, you would expect to have a really, really tough draw, and you don't. You have a favorable draw for the conference. I think this is kind of a lot more evenly matched. And so adjusted for seed, I think it's a little less favorable than some of those on the other side. But again, like in a vacuum, I don't hate this. I do think we probably should have been a higher seed anyways, but like all that stuff out the window, I don't hate this matchup. They are really, really similar to San Diego State, but like you mentioned, you know, kind of looking at UAB, they're like San Diego State light. They're not quite, they're not as good as San Diego State at the end of the day. They're a San Diego State that's not quite as good as the real thing, which is good because we went 1-2 against the real thing this year. So we've been competitive, but a slight edge would go to San Diego State, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with the matchup. I'm okay with the way this turned out. I think a big part of how this game goes, and I hate to be that guy, but it's the way this game's officiated, allowing Great to play kind of a full play to his full game will be huge. We've seen that throughout the season. This is a team, you mentioned the size, you mentioned some of the height on the inside. Their interior D is not overly impressive to me.
I would even go as far as to say it's bad. It's not a good interior.
It's not good. I think you were talking about it on Twitter at some point throughout this past week, but like that's a weakness for TCU. If Great can play, if they're going to let him man up and play the way he can, that could be really, really good for him. If they're kind of reining him in, it looks different, and you probably see, you know, Utah State rely on guard play, which you mentioned is huge in March. I like our guard play, but I play the numbers game. I like to take a strength that we have and use it to attack a weakness that they have.
Yeah,
Great is obviously a strength that we have. Interior defense is a weakness that they have. If they're going to let that, you know, if they're going to let them play, Great awesome work could have a really, really nice game in the post. I think that's really going to be a big part of how you win this game.
Yeah, this is for reference. TCU has the number 207 2-point percentage defense at 50.9%. I'm just going purely off the top of my head here. I don't think Utah State saw a ton worse than that in the Mountain West play. There were a lot of good 2-point shooting defenses in this conference, and Great Awesome Force still won Player of the Year.
Yeah, probably like Air Force. Yeah, Air Force maybe, just because they tend to be small. But like, yeah, I mean, Mountain West was good this year, and they were good in the post. They were good in the.
And
it was war. I mean, we saw what happened with Ladie. I mean, Ladie and Great went to war.
Yeah.
That's not what this is going to look like. So you're basically taking San Diego State and then taking Ladie away
from
it.
Yes. That was the point I was going to make, is that they are a lot like San Diego State if San Diego State didn't have a guy who could bail them out of bad offensive possessions all the time.
which is what
he does. They are also notably 258th in defensive free throw rate. That's really, really, really bad. That's not a good weakness to have against this Utah State team. I did like, there were some quotes immediately after the selection from several Utah State people, Danny Sprinkle and Darius Brown specifically. And I think both of them mentioned that usually in the NCAA tournament, the refs will let you play. They will mostly allow for physicality. There's been a lot of physicality in the first four. That's generally the way that it goes. And I liked that both of them mentioned that both of them mentioned, like, we're not going to play this game. We know we can't play this game looking for contact. We have to play through contact. We have to play physically. I think if Utah State knows it can do that, Utah State is a lot more dangerous because that's what Utah State wants to do. That's the way that they want to play. They get free throws from doing that. They have a high free throw rate from doing that. But this team is at its best when it knows it can just play physically. It can play as physically as it wants to, which I think was kind of an issue at the Mountain West tournament, was not really having a great feel for the whistle.
And that's a way that they want to play, but it's also a way they almost have to play.
Yeah.
Because for as good as Osabor is at a lot of things, free throw shooting is a concern. And it was more of a concern, I think, in that tournament than it had been all season.
Yeah.
But he's like a career 64.8 free throw shooter. He's hovering around 65% on his career. That's not very good. He's shooting 63.3% this year from the line. That's not good. So you're talking about a player that, with a tight whistle suffers on both sides of the ball. Cause he's not somebody that you want to have pick up his second and third foul in the first half. But you're also talking about a player that you don't want at the line a whole lot.
And so
that ability that, coaches and players are all looking for, and fans too, by the way, that we're all looking for to let these guys play, that cuts in favor of Utah State a lot. Because getting to the line is a nice it's a nice bonus that happens with Utah State. I think Gray Osabor, like, he's at his best when he's finishing with contact and then he gets to go to the line. I think that's what makes him like just a real menace, because he's doing all of his scoring at the rim and then he gets, you know, he fouls out your guy and he gets some extra points. There's other guys on the team that can get to the line pretty easily as well. But that does become a concern if he starts to pick up a lot of fouls and if he's on the line a lot. But I like that matchup though.
And the specific individual matchups with guys who will likely be handling the bulk of the Great Osabor assignment. For fouls per 40 minutes, you've got Micah Peavy at 3.1, Jacoby Coles at 3.7, Chuck O'Bannon up at 4.5, Xavier Quirks at 3.7, and then Ernest Uday, who has been starting for them recently, and I think will probably draw that starting center spot at 4.7. I think as funny as it is, like, and you're never going to complain about getting free throws, like you said, it's not. He's still shooting better than 50%. It's a better than coin flip chance that he will hit at least one shot and maybe a second one. But I think more important is just that he's getting those guys into foul trouble. He's sending them to the bench. He's whittling down the amount of size that TCU has available and cutting down a pretty significant rotation. They play 9 or 10 guys pretty consistently.
That was another thing I was going to point out. Like, drawing a couple fouls early, especially against this team, is huge, because that is one concern that I do have, is the depth that TCU has. I mean, that's depth that you don't see, that we didn't see at least in the Mountain West a lot. I mean, we talked about Boise State's dream team. They're like 4 deep, maybe.
Yeah,
they're certainly not 9 deep. Even San Diego State is deeper than most Mountain West teams, but I don't think they're 9 deep. So that is something that would be a concern. If you can address that by picking up a few quick fouls with, using great, that's huge. That goes a long way.
And I would say the same thing for some of the guards, right? Like, Utah State's guards don't draw a ton of trips to the free throw line. Some of them draw more than others, but you've got three guys up in the 20s, and then Ian Martinez up at 44.3 for free throw rate.
Yeah.
Those four, Darius Brown, Ian Martinez, Mason Falslev, and Josh Oduje, need to be attacking. They need to be doing the same thing, because Jameer Nelson Jr. and Avery Anderson have the same problems. They have the exact same foul problems. They're both up over 3 fouls per 40 minutes. You got to whittle that bench down a little bit. And even Tavian Tennyson, who's coming off the bench, same deal, 3.2 per 40. Like, that's a weakness. That's a very, very real weakness for this team. And you got to get some guys on the bench early on. The other thing here that really stands out to me about TCU is the turnover defense. It's really strong, up at 22nd nationally, 20.8%. They will press. They are not afraid to press. They play up tempo. It's not quite New Mexico level fast, but it is fast. Especially their offense is really fast. They're 31st in average offensive possession length, which is really quick. But they force a lot of turnovers. I think if you talked to me a month ago, I would be very concerned about that for Utah State, and it could still be an issue. It was an issue throughout January specifically. This was very much a January problem. And then as they came into February, they had back-to-back games where they just gave the ball away too much in the San Diego State and Nevada losses. Since then, it's really not been a problem. It's really not been an issue. They were at 12.1 against Boise State. They've been under 16% in all but four games, and two of those they were up at 16.3. They really had two bad turnover games since those two losses, Fresno State and Air Force. They won both of those games. Those were not good turnover games. Down the stretch here, 6.3% against San Jose State, 16.3% against New Mexico, which is a team that forces a lot of turnovers, 10.7% against Fresno State in the tournament, and 11.8% against San Diego State. They've pretty much fixed it. They've pretty much fixed it at this point. It was a problem that they wanted to address, and I think they largely have here. That has to hold, I think, is really the biggest thing. That cannot come back because this is a defense that will force turnovers. They've got active hands. They're in the passing lanes. Jameer Nelson's really good at forcing steals. He's, 12th in steal rate individually. Avery Anderson forces a lot of steals. Micah Peavy is active down low. Emmanuel Miller is pretty active. They have guys who can do this. They have a lot of length. They have really good athletes. Utah State, I think, has to... And this is really always kind of a key for Utah State. It's got to be below probably 16%. That's kind of been the baseline all year. Below 16% turnover rate offensively, you're feeling pretty good. That in solid numbers that don't just show up on the spreadsheet probably means about 10. You keep it around 10. That's usually the benchmark that they try to set. If you're around 10 turnovers, I think you feel pretty good about this because if you play the game straight up, Utah State has a lot of advantages here. If you give TCU a bunch of extra possessions, it becomes an issue.
Yeah. You don't want to. Yeah, you're right. This is something that we've seen be a problem. I think we've seen this team struggle with giving the ball away at times. It was never like a pervasive, huge issue, but it was a problem. And then it was addressed, which is super, super impressive. Speaks to Danny Sprinkle as a coach. You've also kind of seen this team struggle with the press. That seems to be resolved as well. So like you said, that's got to stick. This is March, right? So anything that you can, any advantage that you give the other team is going to count. You can't let this team get into rhythm. You can't give them a bunch of extra possessions. But like you said, you play this straight up, limit the turnovers, beat the press, stay out of foul trouble. I think the edge looks really, really nice for Utah State. And you mentioned, some of those, you mentioned Ian Martinez getting to the foul line specifically. I'm looking at Ian Martinez to have a big game this game. Just judging by the other two Mountain West games that have happened, which there's no reason that this pattern should exist or continue, but their leading scorers have not scored a lot. Isaiah Stevens had like 5 points in their win. Somebody called it like a bad game. It was not a bad game. He did everything else, but he had kind of a lower scoring game. Boise State was kind of the same thing where, like, Dagan Hart was not scoring a lot and Rice wasn't, like, only had 2 points. If that pattern continues and Darius Brown has a lower scoring game, I'm looking at Ian Martinez. Ian Martinez, I think we've talked about that throughout this season. Like, you know what you're getting with Great. You know what you're getting with Darius Brown. Ian Martinez is going to be the X factor in some of these games, and especially in March. Having a wing that can play the way he does is – It feels so good to have a guy like him on your team.
Yeah. Utah State needs, I think it specifically needs a lot from him and needs probably a good performance off the bench from Josh. I think that this would be a great time for Isaac Johnson to hit a couple threes, which he's been good for.
Josh has to bounce back, by the way. He had a rough tournament.
Yeah. It's been kind of stilted for Josh and Ian of late. And I think that is like, there are some size disadvantages that Utah State has throughout the lineup here against TCU because TCU does have three guys up over 6'7" in its starting lineup. Utah State's starting, a guy who's 6'2" and two guys who are 6'3". And then it's got size up front, but there's really, without Max Ogbonpolo, there's really not a wing on this team. and that has been the issue for Utah
yeah,
State at times this
true.
Year. But there is the other side of that, which is that somebody's going to have to guard Ian Martinez, because
yeah.
it's not going to be Jameer Nelson or Avery Anderson, because they have to guard, you know, Darius Brown and Mason Folslev.
Right.
Emmanuel
yeah.
Miller, I don't think, is going to be able to keep up, you know, defensively with Ian Martinez. He's 6'7", 215. He moves well at 6'7", 215, but that's still, you're asking a lot of a guy there. Ian Martinez is quick. He's hard to keep in front of you. He needs to be aggressive, and it has to be aggressive in a productive way. I think that
right.
has been
yeah,
an issue
yeah,
for him sometimes.
Big part of it.
Is yes, he's taking shots. yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes, he is initiating offense for him.
Yeah, he's dribbling a lot.
It has to go somewhere. It has to be
right.
within. It has to be within structure. It has to be within the offense. It has to be a good look, because he'll knock down good looks all day. He'll knock down bad looks sometimes, but it
yeah.
can't be there. It can't be a 2-for-11 shooting day here from Ian Martinez. There's just been too many of those recently. I think that he
right.
really might kind of be the X factor here for Utah State, because there is not.
I think so.
There's not a great solution for him in this TCU lineup. There's not really an Ian Martinez stopper there.
Yeah, like I said, this is something we've known this. I mean, we know that he's going to win games for you for those reasons that you just laid out. I agree. I think he's your X factor in this game. Great is going to do what he needs to do. You know, like the game goes the way of the great goes, really, you know. Uh-huh. But on top of that, I think your X factor is going to be Ian Martinez. What he's able to do on offense.
Yeah. I would even
and defense, like, by the way.
Yes, and defense too.
Very, very good on defense.
Yeah, no none of the two fouls within 3 minutes deal. There's not the time for that.
For Johnson too. He can't
yeah.
do that either.
Yeah.
Nobody do it.
Yeah, nobody do that. And like, at least with TCU there is a true big in the lineup, and so Johnson can start. Johnson can play in this game, and it's not
yeah.
going to be, it's not small ball. They've got, you know, 6'11", 260, 6'8", 215, 6'7", 215 in the front court. That's not small ball. Johnson
yeah.
is built for games like this. He's capable of playing in games like this. He can't.
He causes problems on the offensive end too, because
yeah.
of his ability to shoot. Like you, yeah, he's a big, but he can shoot a lot better too. So
yeah.
a lot better than most guys his size. So
yeah.
that helps.
And now you're asking Micah Peavy, who is, you know, not a great shot blocker, but is a really good rebounder. Now he has to come out of the paint to guard Isaac Johnson, because
yeah.
I don't think that they're going to put Micah Peavy on Great Osabor a ton. I would guess that that's going to be largely Ernest Uday's territory, especially because the alternative is that you're giving up, you know, 50 pounds between PV and Osabor, and you're making Ernest Uday guard a 3-point shooter, and he's 260
yeah.
and he doesn't want to do that. And nobody on TCU's sideline wants him to do that. That's not good. That's not good for anybody to do. So you do have
yeah.
to sacrifice something if you're TCU and Isaac is stretching the floor in the way that he's capable of. I would even say that, like, you know, off the bench, assuming he plays, which he has recently, I think Javon Jackson could be important here. I think it's another
yeah.
deal where Darius Brown is going to need a kind of a pressure valve. I think he's going to need a second guy
yeah.
who can handle the ball comfortably without turning it over, just back there sometimes. And Javon Jackson has played big minutes. He's done really well at limiting turnovers. And if he steps in and knocks down a three or two threes or three threes, that's a big bonus for Utah State. That's a really, really, really nice boost to have. Just a guy who can come in and knock down a couple threes off the bench. He's you know, 37.8% shooter from deep this year. That's good. That's a good
yeah,
rate. I think
it's really,
you know,
good.
He knocks down one or two. That's 6 free points right there. That's
yeah.
6 extra points that could be very well the difference in a game that is projected by KenPom right now to be a 1-point game.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, if you're TCU, the last thing you want to think about is Javon Jackson. You
yeah.
do not want to think about him. You have other things to worry about. If Javon Jackson can come in and make you think about him, that's a huge, huge boost for Utah State, because anytime that you're thinking about Javon Jackson, you're not thinking about Great Osabor, you're not thinking about Ian Martinez. So having him just come in and not be a warm body, which is something he's capable of. Like, that's not what he does. He comes in and he is a difference maker. If he brings that to this game, you know, just make him think about you. somebody's going to be open. If they're guarding Javon Jackson, that means somebody that should be double teamed isn't being double teamed.
Yep.
Or if you leave him open, he can make you pay. So I think he could be a big part of this game as well.
Yeah. If at the end of the game we're looking at a stat line where it's like Javon Jackson, 14 minutes, 8 points, two steals, three rebounds, one assist, I think Utah State probably won that game.
Yeah, I would agree with
like
that. I would agree.
That's a solid shift, and I think that's about where you'd like to see him. I think that's about the size of it with this. I don't have a ton of I don't have another a ton of other thoughts right now. I don't have like a score prediction. I could see either way. I think Utah State is entirely capable of winning this game. I think it is. I think Utah State's capable of winning this game. It's just a matter of going and playing their style and playing with full, focus and intensity and all of that. And there's nothing else to look ahead to at this point. You might as well do it now. And I think if they do that, they'll have as good a chance as they've had, to snap this NCAA tournament streak.
Yeah, I agree. I think this isn't the first time that I've said that I feel good about a matchup. This isn't the first time that you've looked at a team across from Utah State on that round of 64 line and felt good about things and felt like Utah State should be able to win if they just play the way they can. Hasn't worked out a whole lot, as you alluded to. You haven't won a tournament game since 2001, and you've been there a lot since then. So something hasn't been adding up. That being said, I do feel really good about this game. I think this is a good chance to break that, end that drought. I like this matchup, but it's gonna take playing your fullest game. It's gonna take playing the way that you can, the way that you need to. I like the chances here. Just kind of to mention, I don't think we really mentioned it. The next game, in this tournament setting would be the winner of Purdue and Grambling State. Grambling State beat Montana State tonight, Danny Sprinkle's old team. So those two teams will play. And I think Utah State has a great shot at advancing to meet the winner of that game. And again, I know I've said it before. I know we've talked about how Utah State has had chances before in the postseason. This is a good chance as any. There's no reason Utah State shouldn't be playing two games this year. There's no reason they should not advance. It's there for the taking for this team. That's all I really have on this game. I would just all I would add at this point is keep an eye on the preview that Patrick's working on, because that's gonna be excellent work. So if you want more on this, we have more coming, and by we I mean Patrick. But there's more coming on this game, but I feel good about it.
Yeah, I'll take a parting shot here because you mentioned the potential second round game. If this comes to pass, Great Osabor will make Zach Edey retire from basketball. Anyway, let's talk about women's basketball. He's never going to play again. He's done. He's been permanently shamed from playing basketball. He's never going to step on the floor again. Never putting on the shoes again. He's going to go. He's just going to go get an office job. He's going to go do something else.
Great Osabor will finish what St. Peter's started last year
it's about time.
and get rid the world of Zach Edey.
At long
Okay, well,
last.
with that prediction from Patrick, let's move right along. You mentioned that let's talk women's basketball. Actually, before we jump into women's basketball, we talked all about the six bid Mountain West. Just a quick shout out to UNLV at the NIT. They're moving on. They beat
Or
Princeton,
Wyoming.
I
Or oh
believe.
yes, UNLV, yes, the men's side, yes. Wyoming was the women's side NIT. Yeah, you're right.
So the men's side, UNLV, the team that we all wanted to make a seven bid league, which didn't work out and would not have worked out. It's the NIT, but if you just can't get enough basketball, keep an eye on that one. I think UNLV is just about as hot as they come right now, and they're pretty good. But
I will say I mentioned this on I think the Bracketology show that we did with Brian. UNLV's streak of not winning against anybody who is an Air Force in the Mountain West tournament continues another year. It grows even further. I think it was like 2015 the last time that they did that. It will
just
have been a decade since they have beaten a non-Air Force team in the Mountain West tournament the next time that
oh my
tournament is fielded.
goodness, it's
That's
just it's crazy. I mean, this
awesome.
is a team, like we said on that show, this is a team with national championship banners. Come on. And by the way, on that note, they won tonight against Princeton, And they sent out an actual tweet saying, "This is our first postseason win in the last 16 years." Don't
Oh,
send that
don't
tweet.
say
Do
that.
not send that.
What are you doing? Don't say that. Don't call
You
attention to
have
that.
a national championship. Don't say that.
Come
Just
on.
move on.
You
For
can't say that. You for an NIT game? Come
an
on.
NIT game.
St. John's didn't even
Just
want to play in the NIT. That's the most NIT program of all time. They didn't even want to go. They made the NIT for those guys and they said, "No, thank you. I'm good."
Yeah.
You
Wild stuff from
can't be doing
UNLV.
that. Winning a CIT game and
Yeah.
posting about you. The streak
The
is over.
streak is over. We won a postseason game. Remember us? We won the championship in the 90s.
Come
It's we're
on.
back. We're back.
That's you gotta somebody
So
gotta somebody's gotta tell the social media guy. Don't post that.
yeah,
Don't
delete it.
post that.
Delete this
Delete that.
now.
Get
There's
that
still
down.
time.
Bring that down right now. Anyway,
Yeah,
women's basketball. What's going on?
moving on. There's not much on women's basketball, and that's kind of the whole story here. Obviously, no head coach has been hired. I expect that to move as quickly as, and I mentioned this in the story that we wrote together. If you haven't read that, by the way, Patrick hooked it up with a great assist. It was go read that. And we talked about a lot. We talked about that issue a lot as well. I'm just kind of going through those candidates, but no coach hire yet. I expect that to move as quickly as it can, but a lot of teams are playing right now. So I don't know how quickly that does get resolved. But in the meantime, the transfer portal is open for both men's and women's basketball. And to my knowledge, none of the team has entered the portal, which is, to be completely candid, very surprising to me. And like I said, that is the story here, is that nothing's moving. I expected the team to kind of flood into the portal, especially keeping in mind, just because you enter the portal doesn't mean you have to leave. This is definitely a situation where you would not blame these girls for entering the portal, seeing what's out there, seeing who they, seeing who we get in as a coach, having conversations and doing what's best for yourself. So far, that hasn't happened. I don't know if there are, I don't know if that's moving on the back and it's just moving slowly and girls are kind of taking their time, dragging their feet to get in the portal. I don't know if they're in the portal and they just haven't announced it. But as of right now, there's officially no girls in the portal, which is very surprising to me.
Yeah, it's I wonder if maybe it's a, like a wait and see situation, see what the new coaching hire looks like.
I think so. I just thought
Not
they would be waiting while in the portal, but yeah.
I think maybe another part of it is like there are some players on this team who I think would draw a significant amount of buzz in the portal. There are also probably
Yeah,
some players
yep.
who I don't know if they have the resumes where they would land at another D1 school if they were to enter the portal. And maybe you wait to see, if they, and that's not to say that they're not D1 quality, but they either didn't
Right.
play that much this year, the stats weren't that great, or whatever it was. There's a lot of players in the portal.
Or their team won five games and
That could
it's,
be too,
yeah.
So maybe you wait to see what the new coach's evaluation is and see if you still have a D1 spot, right? Because you don't
Yeah.
really want to risk that if you don't know for sure that you have a landing spot at the same level. Nobody wants to jump down. It's just not the way that college basketball players are wired. They will if they
Yeah.
have to, but nobody really goes into the portal hoping to do that. And so I think that there are probably some cases as well where you have players who just want to see what their place is with Utah State moving forward. There are some others who are, it is kind of surprising because I do think that they would have suitors who have yet to enter the portal. I guess good news for, potential candidates. Hey, look, if you want it, there's a whole roster here.
Yeah, yeah.
You could just take it over and pick and choose and all that. Like that's a
There's
nice
some
selling
players on
point.
this roster. I've
Yeah.
said it. You could build something here
Yeah.
with
Yeah.
just,
You want to
a
keep
few
Gracie
changes.
Johnson and you want to keep Gracie Johnson and Cheyenne Stubbs and a couple other players rolling? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
They're already here and
Yeah.
they're
Johnson and Sugataraga playing next to each other one more year is something I would be very excited to see. So you can build something here. We have the foundation, I think.
But right now on that front, at least on the portal front, no news is good news, or at least better news. On the coaching side, like you said, I would guess it's probably a fairly sped up timeline, but also a lot of coaches are still coaching right now. There are a lot of games still to be played in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. There are assistants on NCAA tournament teams who are locked in on doing that. Utah State is not just sitting there, you know, twiddling its thumbs. Utah State has been doing its work on this and will continue to do its work on this, but it, you know, it's not going to be probably tonight. It's not going to be tonight. It'll probably be within the next week or two that you start to hear serious rumblings of who this is going to be. And then, you know, probably late March, early April, you'll see a coach actually formally introduced, and we'll go from there.
Yep. Yep. In the meantime, just kick back and enjoy basketball. There's plenty of basketball. If you have to worry about the women's coaching vacancy, I'll just say it. It's going to be okay. Just kick back and enjoy some basketball in the meantime. We'll be all right. We'll get through this together.
It can't possibly be any worse. There's no need to worry. It will be better. If they didn't hire a coach at all, it would be better.
It can't get any worse. I'm done. The move has been made, so I can be a lot more candid and have been. I don't have to interview Kayla Ard ever again, so yeah. I can be more honest about this. We can only go up from here.
It'll be fine.
And I'll tell you right now, we will win more games than five next year. I'll stake my reputation on that. That is not even a question for me.
Yeah, that would be advisable for sure. All right, that will do it. We will talk to you all again soon.